Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program Mike Skinner, who is Vice President at CLX Logistics. And today we're going to talk about moving up the global transportation maturity curve. Now, it's no secret that, over the past, decade or more, manufacturers, retailers, and other companies have, their supply chains have become more global as they've been sourcing and manufacturing and selling the goods, across borders. And likewise, when you look at the technology required to enable, cross-border and international global transportation, that's also evolved significantly over the past decade. In fact, over the past 20 years since I've been really looking at transportation management systems. So today we're really going to explore, okay, where are we today from a global transportation management standpoint, both from the challenges and the opportunities that are available there for manufacturers and other companies, as well as where are we on the technology side to really help enable this. And, really privileged, to have with us today Mike Skinner from CLX. He's on the front lines of this, with clients every day. And so very lucky to have him on board, to share his perspective and insights in terms of what's happening today and provide some advice in terms of other companies that perhaps are, struggling or just getting started with global transportation. Just want to remind all of you that are joining us live today that, part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So, as Mike and I are having our conversation here, if you've got a question for Mike, you can do so via the submit a question button. And I'll keep an eye on that. And if it's a good and appropriate question, I'll certainly try to weave it into the conversation. If you are joining us as a visitor, however, you will have to sign in first and create an account with Spreecast before you can ask a question. So with that, Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
Mike, like I always do whenever I bring on a new guest on Talking Logistics, I always like to find out a little bit about their background and, kind of how they got involved with, this whole industry to begin with. So kind of before we talk about global transportation and moving up the maturity curve, why don't you tell us briefly a little bit about, your career path, how and why you got involved in supply chain logistics and what your current role and responsibilities are there at CLX?
Sure. I think anybody my age would be lying if they told you that they planned to get into logistics and supply chain when they were entering school and so forth. But I ended up there. I was an industrial engineer in my undergrad and ended up in warehousing and transportation logistics in my first job. So doing things like time study, base plus optimization and efficiency studies in warehouses and designing warehouse flows and systems and so forth. I then had a really great, just fortunate opportunity coming out of grad school to work with Ernst & Young during the time when they were really building their whole supply chain practice from scratch. I think there were two folks there when I started at the partner level, and there were about 250 of us within about 3 years before I left. So it was great, really great time to really see a lot of the evolution of thinking and thought leadership around supply chain and logistics during that time. And then had a great opportunity to come on board at CLX Logistics, was ChemLogix at that time in the 2000 timeframe. And started with the task of managing our third-party logistics operations. And just as luck would have it, interesting progression there. A lot of our prospects in the for 3PL and outsourcing services were very interested in our technology, but not as interested in outsourcing. So they wanted to keep some of that core competence in-house. But we're very interested in getting into some of the supply chain and transportation solutions that we were using and presenting, but really interested in doing so at a smaller footprint in terms of price and IT resources and so forth. So we from that essentially started a business line, a business practice focused entirely on developing with partners on the technology side. And then and selling, reselling, implementing, supporting, and then growing solutions around logistics, primarily around transportation. And so that's really what started me down this path back in 2003. It's been a really great run. It's been a nice growth generator for the company, and it's really continued to be fun to this day.
Great, great background, and you're right. I mean, it's very few people that I usually have on as guests, started out in supply chain logistics. You know, they started out in as an engineer in some other role or manufacturing, or just came out of kind of stumbled into supply chain logistics. Myself, I'm a material science engineer by background and started in manufacturing, and obviously now for almost 20 years, I've been really focused on this as well. Touching upon the last comment you made in terms of your current role, certainly the role of the merging, as I've been talking about, of technology with managed services, with consulting, I think is, something that obviously that you've been, very involved with over the past, 10 plus years or so. So, certainly that's a trend that I've been seeing as well. Now in your role and kind of having a pulse on what's happening in the market, and obviously with the companies you work with, like I said in my introductory comments, global transportation management, something, it might have been something that relatively few companies did, 15, 20, 25 years ago. But today, more and more companies are, getting involved with having to, as the transportation networks are becoming more global, having to manage these processes more effectively. I mean, what are some of the main challenges that you're seeing out there with some of the companies you work with when it comes to global transportation?
It's a great question. It really depends on who you are, honestly, as a company. We're working with companies that are large and global and got there through organic growth, and they're dealing with global transportation networks and systems and organizations that essentially are organically grown and are bursting at the seams, if you will, and held together by a lot of baling wire and lots of programmers that have been managing legacy solutions over the years. We're also working with companies that have gotten there through acquisition. So 10 years ago, they might have been $1 billion in global revenues, and they're now 10. They've gotten there through acquisitions in all regions, multiple acquisitions in the same region. And so so you really look at all these organizations very differently from one to the next. But I think a lot of the similarities in terms of the complexities that they are seeing are related to the fact that most of them are really trying to take a global view of transportation. But the realities are that transportation happens locally. So we have customers that are shipping pallets of goods on a day-to-day basis to a manufacturer next door and need to track and understand those flows. And at the same time, they're shipping dozens of thousands of containers on a global basis across many thousands of lanes, and worrying about customs declaration and track and trace, and working with the ocean liners and so forth. So the complexities really at the local level tend to really dictate the challenges at a global level when you're asking a global transportation manager, how does he do his job, and what are the KPIs, and what are the drivers and dictators of success in all of that. And then, just those complexities then are then further complicated by regional cultural differences, regional transportation needs. Palletized freight shippers in Ohio are dealing with on a day-to-day basis are very, very different from shippers in Europe who are shipping pan-Europe across all modes, intermodal and short sea, and across borders many times. And obviously very different from shippers that are dealing with freight in Brazil, where you have to worry about freight being intercepted and hijacked, to dealing with the myriad of local carriers and challenges in developing markets like in China and Asia and so forth. So what's interesting is that we've seen a lot of pressure on these global organizations to manage freight globally and be able to present to a corporate structure, costs and flows and volumes and trends and so forth. And yet they need to rely on that local activity that's happening on a day-to-day and minute-to-minute basis. They've got to rely on local plant managers, on local load planners, on the shipping department, and what's going on the shop floor to really enable them to do any of that. So I think those are the biggest challenges. And we talk about global transportation, especially for companies that truly are global, that are manufacturing, that are distributing, that have customers in each of many different regions, and then also are handling transportation internationally on the water and in the air. Obviously, it's quite a set of complexities. And I guess at the bottom line, it's just hard.
Yeah, no, I you know, a lot of what you said certainly is things that I hear as well from the companies that I talk to, and I think you hit something really interesting. You mentioned something really interesting toward the end there, right? I think what a lot of companies are looking for from a global transportation perspective, at the end of the day, they're trying to answer some very basic questions, right? How much are we spending on transportation annually, right, across our company? And sounds like an easy question, right? But you know, as you noted, when you kind of peel down the onion, or when you kind of get into the details, and when you look at the diversity of the modes that they may be dealing with, the local or regional type of operating realities, so on and so forth, trying to roll all that up into being able to answer that basic question is anything but, you know, but trivial. So from the visibility standpoint, where it's a visibility to cost or visibility to shipments, that seems like something that is relatively, or should be relatively, simple, but everything that happens to be able to enable that is where the complexity comes in. Did I kind of fairly summarize what you said there?
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of further upstream from that process of trying to assess what actually happened is the need to provide tools and solutions to, again, individuals who are operating at a local level. And not just the individuals in your company, but the individuals on the carrier side. I think what's often overlooked in transportation and systems and solutions is the fact that, we as shippers are dealing with tens, dozens, hundreds of different companies when it comes to moving freight. And so the challenges of providing solutions that work for local carriers, regional carriers in the U.S. and North America and in Sao Paulo and in China and in Paris, France, very different sets of requirements and needs and very different cultures and so forth. So I think that execution layer and the ability to deploy solutions and dictate what's happening on the ground is very complicated and challenging.
Now, Mike, I mean, I think when a lot of folks, at least historically, when they thought about, global transportation, and when they thought about, even just the examples you gave, a lot of folks think of, well, these are multi, you're talking about multi-billion dollar companies, they've got global footprint. I mean, are you seeing similar kind of challenges, or are the challenges different when you kind of talk more about smaller or mid-sized companies?
I guess I would say that the challenges are very different, but similarly challenging, if you will. If you look at, let's say, a shipper with 50,000 shipments on a global scale, relatively small shipper, a lot of similarities in their manufacturing processes, because they're not very large, the opportunity for complexity just isn't there. So certainly, a simpler set of challenges across the organization, fewer people to deal with, fewer conflicting activities and so forth. But I think what a lot of those shippers are dealing with is just a much smaller organization, so less depth, less breadth as it relates to the ability to execute these kinds of solutions. And that's not just on the logistics side, it's logistics, it's IT, it's organizationally. You know, I might be a small company, but that also means I don't have a lot of resources and a lot of spare time to devote to resolving those kinds of challenges. And then, you know, if you look at the larger companies, as I mentioned before, you know, we're dealing with companies that have grown very, very differently from one to the next. And so, you know, those that have grown organically often have very different sets of challenges and drivers than those that have grown through acquisition. You know, I would say that where we see the most difficulty in terms of companies really trying to make change happen on a global scale is really in those organizations that have grown through acquisition. And they're dealing with multiple ERPs, they're dealing with you know, maybe even a really good TMS or a technology for freight in the US and a really good one in Europe, but they don't have a global solution. They've got different cultures that they're dealing with that, that absorb and respond to change very differently. And so I think that's probably where we see the greatest amount of challenges in those global organizations that have grown through acquisition. But again, I think it really depends on both size as well as really the nature of the organization.
Right. No, I you know, certainly with some of the smaller mid-sized companies that I talk to, particularly those that are just getting started, you know, a lot of the challenges they deal with now is, you know, maybe they hadn't had to deal as much before with ocean transportation or with the compliance aspect of it. And they lack, you know, as you mentioned, they may lack the resources, the technology, you know, the time to really do it, you know, as effectively as possible. Whereas maybe in the past, you know, when they were smaller, you know, a person can wear three or four hats and do it. But now as they've grown themselves, you know, and the scale is becoming larger, it's becoming more and more difficult for them to, you know, manage this effectively. You know, you talked about technology a little bit there. So let's talk about now technology and the role that it plays, specifically transportation management systems. You know, like I mentioned in my opening comments, you know, I've been looking at the TMS market now for almost 20 years. And if you went back 20 years ago, you know, a lot of TMS systems were predominantly domestic oriented, right? Truckload, less than truckload. You know, you can even argue that they were just U.S. centric for that matter. You know, fast forward to today with all the challenges and requirements and opportunities that shippers are encountering from a global transportation standpoint. I mean, how have TMS solutions evolved in response to, you know, global transportation management requirements?
I guess I would say that, you know, very much as you just sort of said in that last phrase, in response to requirements. You know, it's interesting. You know, we've seen two very different paths, I think, over the last 10 to 15 years as it relates to global transportation solutions. You know, we've seen many of the very largest global shippers take what historically were sort of the on-premise legacy TMS solutions like Oracle, like Manugistics, like JDA and Red Prairie and some others, and invested very significantly in globalizing them. And so those solutions kind of evolved in terms of the deployments that we've seen. But again, I from our perspective, it's really been just the very few and the very largest shippers that have effectively invested the time, resources, and money to get real capabilities and benefits on a fully global scale. So we've seen that as a one trend. And then I think on the other side, we've seen clearly a huge growth in on-demand SaaS, on web-based TMS solutions, transportation solutions, starting in the late 90s and growing very quickly through the 2000s to the point where, you know, it's certainly the dominant model. If you look at North America, there are a handful of dominant players on the SaaS TMS side. If you look at Europe, there's a similar number of solutions in that market that are doing a great job with carrier networks and connectivity and execution on a regional scale. You know, I think what's interesting is that, and what we're learning more as we talk to more and more global shippers, is that there hasn't been until just the last couple of years an option for a SaaS TMS that really has been deployed globally. And I think that's in part because we've had, you know, strong internet-based solutions that have grown up in the U.S. and strong ones in Europe. And we've also had a handful of strong solutions on the water, handling international transportation, you know, multimodal planning for ocean shipments from Asia into the U.S. and on a global scale. But we haven't really seen full capability across all of those requirements in the same platform, and so that's where I think we've seen a lot of change in the last couple of years, where some global shippers have really taken that initiative and worked with their providers to do that. So essentially, to take a SaaS environment platform and deploy full capability in each region. Right, so everything from, you know, local or regional LTL consolidation, for example, in the U.S. So the optimization, planning, and execution of LTL freight and truckload freight in the U.S. market, very, very different from a lot of the requirements we see in Europe, for example, where in Europe we have a very dominant 3PL environment. They have implemented and deployed the technologies for optimizing and consolidating and getting across border and so forth. So the shippers have relied on those 3PL solutions in large part in Europe. And then an entire separate set of challenges around the oceans on the ocean side with a whole different set of players. You know, your ocean carriers that tend to be less concerned about your specific needs on a day-to-day basis than you might like. You know, networks of freight forwarders and so forth that really, again, add a lot of complexity there. You know, so we're really just in the last couple of years seeing shippers that have taken that plunge to do all of that along with their SaaS TMS provider to do that effectively. And it's really become a compelling option, to be honest, because we're now seeing the ability to work with a global transportation organization with global responsibility for procurement and cost and reporting up through corporate, able to now put in tools on the same platform to give a palletized freight shipper or plant in Ohio the tools they need, which may be very, very different from what I need shipping internationally out of Ghent, Belgium, for example. So it's been really interesting and very exciting. We've had several customers really take that plunge and deploy there, and it's been a really interesting shift for certainly for us and for some of the companies that we've been working with the last couple of years.
Yeah, no, I think when you look at certainly software as a service, you know, in cloud, solutions, you know, certainly that the adoption rate has grown significantly, as you pointed out, you know, over the past decade, you know, and I think what's interesting is that it is opening up new paths for companies to achieve that, you know, their global transportation management objectives, right? Both from a visibility standpoint, as well as from a operational standpoint. You mentioned, you know, I think for a lot of historically, you know, the traditional path was to, you know, take a TMS and behind your firewall and try to implement that in multiple instances across all your geographic regions. Which is, you know, very time consuming, very costly for a lot of companies. And I think we're seeing the same thing. I'm seeing the same thing as well, where companies are really now leveraging the cloud and being able to provide, functionality as needed, right, to the different locations where they're shipping from, but then also use the platform as that kind of one, you know, single source of truth, if you will, for all the data to flow into that platform to be able to, you know, be able to answer that question that we talked about before. You know, what are we spending? How are we doing? How are we doing on customer service, so on and so forth? You touched upon it a little bit, but I mean, when you talk to customers, when you talk to prospects, I mean, what are some of the key capabilities that are important in a TMS to help you know, manage global transportation operations?
I guess I would say that they're getting pretty accustomed to being able to do everything. You know, I think what's fascinating in what we're doing is that, you know, we almost never see the same solution twice. You know, almost every one of our customers and deployments is unique in some way, and usually it's because they're adding new capability to the requirement list. So everybody expects optimization, whether it's local optimization or optimizing your carrier route guide, or optimizing your international route planning, best way to get from Lyon, France to Baltimore. They're all expecting all of that capability that they've had in their domestic TMS solutions, or that they have been marketed on domestic TMS solutions for quite some time now, in each region and across regions. I think the expectations are very high. I think the expectations in some cases really are keeping ahead of the technology providers. So it's been a really exciting process of continuing to try to keep up with all of that. You know, I guess I would say when it comes to really core functionality that's expected and needed, it kind of really does get back to the ability to give the local folks execution capabilities that work for them, because globally deployed, corporate deployed solutions that don't work for all the individuals in the corporation across a very wide and diverse population of shipping facilities, I just tend not to work. So if we're not using the system to book every load with every carrier, if we're not using the system to pay every freight bill, if we're not using the system to track every shipment from pickup to delivery, then all of that reporting that we bought the system for, to see aggregate and trends and you know, regional and BU and shipping facility trends and costs, it doesn't come together, right? So the expectation is very, very clear that we need to be able to execute locally, manage and view globally, and roll everything up into that centralized KPIs and dashboards that our management are looking for.
So would it be fair to say that you know, usability and configurability are kind of critical attributes here, you know, for the reasons you just cited, in terms of being able to enable that kind of heterogeneous environment, you know, in terms of allowing local operations, you know, be able to set up specific business rules, user screens that make sense, you know, for these different ship from locations?
Yeah, it's really key, and it's key within the same organization, and it is as much as it is from one organization to the next. So the way that I work with my freight forwarders for shipments leaving the U.S. and going to Europe may be very, very different from how my folks in Germany are working with their freight forwarders to get freight out of Germany. And so it's you have to be able to accommodate for those differences. And there are differences not just in the user screens, but also in the interface data that's coming in from the ERP. You know, what am I expecting to come from the ERP? What am I expecting my freight forwarder, for example, to provide once they've got the data? What information do I need to be able to share? What am I expecting in terms of customs filing and global trade inquiries and documentation generation and sharing and so forth? Again, yeah, so that local execution and regional execution is key, because the reality is that each of these markets just behave differently, and shipping organizations grow up or organically with local needs.
No, great point. I just want to remind those of you that are watching live that if you do have a question for Mike, now would be the time to submit them. I've got kind of running short, a little bit short on time here, so I've got just a couple of more questions. You brought up freight forwarders, and a lot of shippers still rely on freight forwarders, to plan and execute their ocean and air, shipments, and sometimes even their inland, moves as well. I mean, in light of the more global, TMS solutions that are available now, do you see the shipper forwarder relationship, changing moving forward? And if so, how would their respective roles and responsibilities change?
I think in the short term, what we're seeing is automation of some of those relationships. With the ability to do EDI, electronic-based booking requests and responses and detailed shipping instructions and documentation sharing and so forth, we're certainly seeing the automation of a lot of those existing relationships, obviously driving to more efficiencies, better accuracy, fewer mistakes, less risk, and so forth. I think longer term, we are already starting to see some automation of the traditional role of the freight forwarder. In other words, booking directly with the steamship lines, getting status updates directly from the steamship lines and so forth, customs filing, another example. So data is coming out of the ERP, and we're doing direct filing with customs. So clearly some automation of the traditional roles of freight forwarder. I certainly see that the freight forwarder will continue to add pretty significant value. We have had conversations with shippers who have some expectation that they will be able to automate the freight forwarder out of the equation. We haven't seen that happen in large part because there's just simply too much that happens on a day-to-day basis. Shipments get, bookings get rolled, bookings get split up, things get held up in customs. The ocean carriers, as we mentioned before, don't care quite as much about where my box is as I do. And so there is still a real value add there that I don't see going away in the foreseeable future.
No, I agree. And in fact, I had last month had a conversation kind of related to that, where really freight forwarders and even domestically, when you think about even just domestic transportation brokers, right? I mean, there's a risk management element to them. I mean, they bring other relationships with other carriers and other things to the table that in case of disruptions or in case of you need extra capacity, so on and so forth, that's kind of the role that, freight forwarders, bring to the table as well. But certainly I think the role as the technology continues to, develop and evolve, I think the biggest thing that I see is getting away from those areas that are still being done with spreadsheets. So people still typing in information and paper passing, back and forth. I think those are the areas that, you're going to see, technology play a greater role. Kind of to give some kind of examples. Mike, are you still there?
Can you hear me, Adrian?
I can. It looks like your camera, froze there a little bit. You know what? Let me go ahead. It looks like Mike just dropped off here for a second. I'm going to go ahead and just invite him back on screen, and hopefully we can get to the next question here. Just a second. It's the beauty of doing live programs here. Every once in a while, we'll hit a little speed bump. So just waiting for Mike to appear on screen. It looks like maybe he had maybe lost a little bit of his internet connection there. So what I was saying is basically, you know, what we're seeing is freight forwarders really continue to play an important role in the global transportation management process. And obviously, there's a lot of technology that's being positioned to freight forwarders as well. So they're also in the process of upgrading and enhancing their technology capabilities, both to better integrate with shippers, as well as to and with the carriers that they work with, as well as to be able to provide that enhanced visibility and process automation. Mike, you're back.
I am back.
Okay.
I guess these things happen.
These things do happen. It looks like your connectivity score looks a little bit low, so hopefully you won't drop off here. But I was just going to get to my next question here, which is really, can you share with us some customer examples of how leading companies are managing, their global transportation operations? I mean, what benefits are they achieving? And more importantly, what lessons can other companies learn from these leaders?
Sure. We're working with a number of global shippers again who've sort of gotten there different ways and have different kinds of needs. Manufacturer of luxury vehicles based in Europe and manufacturing operations in Europe, in U.S., in China. They're shipping vehicles into 120 countries around the globe. And they went down this path of bringing in a global TMS primarily as a platform to insource transportation. They had historically been working with a 3PL. Management determined that transportation costs were trending significantly above market. And so they really brought the TMS in as an enabler for a global strategy to insource all of those activities. They literally saved tens of millions of euros in doing so. Really getting control of those procurement contracts with the carriers, getting control over global transportation, reducing misrouted and rerouted and returned vehicles. So literally saving a significant amount of money and also improving on-time delivery to dealerships. I think they were in the high 80s when they started down this path with their 3PL and ramped that up into the mid 90s for on-time to dealer. Clearly, a very unique kind of environment with global vehicle distribution. We're also working with several global diversified manufacturers, again with manufacturing operations around the globe as well as distribution networks on a multi-regional basis. One in particular, based in France, with about 250 plus or minus shipping locations around the globe. They're moving about 500,000 shipments a year on that network. Very much a mature transportation network and distribution network in each of the three regions of U.S., North America, Europe, and in Asia. Their whole initiative was that they've got a global transportation organization. They're standardized on a global SAP platform. They absolutely expected to be able to have standardized processes, practices, and so forth across all facilities when it comes to transportation planning and optimization and execution. So this really is a corporate strategy around standardization on a global scale. They actually headed down the path of doing so with their ERP, with a TM environment from their ERP. And determined that that was really going to be cost prohibitive. So they shifted gears to a SaaS model and went live about a year and a half ago to a significant success in terms of reaching those goals.
Now, two great examples. I mean, the first one is really interesting. It's probably a topic for a whole other episode, where kind of leveraging technology. I mean, one of the things that we're I'm beginning to see, and I wrote about last year, is that as more and more companies look at logistics and transportation in particular as a competitive weapon, if you will, we're seeing some companies bring those operations back in-house and leveraging, the TMS, having a TMS platform is obviously a key enabler to be able, to do that. So that's one example there. The first example is another data point for that. So that's a whole other trend in terms of bringing operations back in-house from 3PLs and to get more control, if you will, and more direct visibility and what's happening on that front. And I think on the second front is something else that I hear about. And it's actually something that's fueling some shippers to actually move to 3PLs is the fact that they don't have the IT resources or even the budget to install a TMS and other logistics applications. So they're relying on the 3PLs to provide that technology, for them. Which is why, going back to what we talked about earlier, I think for a lot of shippers, what they're looking for is that right mix of outsourced technology, managed services, and consulting. They don't necessarily want to, give up full control of everything, but they need help in certain areas, and technology via SaaS model is one of those areas that they're, looking toward. Is something you see, generally speaking, with some of the customers and prospects you deal with?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of it comes down, honestly, to another trend that we're seeing in the industry, which is a challenge to find qualified resources to do this kind of work. The effort it takes to put together an ROI, to pull together an organizational structure, to get IT resources, to get budget approval for putting in solutions like this. Especially when you're talking about it coming out of the logistics organization, which traditionally hasn't had a lot of success in getting these kinds of solutions, ranked up at the top of the priority list against manufacturing and marketing and sales and all the other demands that are driving the priorities around technology solutions. The need to have very competent, capable people in place to make these decisions and drive the change really outstrips what we've seen in terms of the resource pool of candidates that are available on the market and in these organizations to do that. And so, where those resources don't exist, we're absolutely seeing the trend towards 3PL to gain some of those advantages. Where they do exist, we're seeing more of a trend to you're bringing that capability in-house with technology solutions. So yeah, two very different trends, I think, in that.
Great. Well, Mike, we're kind of short on time here, so I'm just going to go right to my last question. As a way to kind of wrap up, I mean, what questions should shippers ask themselves to assess whether they're a leader or a laggard when it comes to global transportation management, and what action should they take to kind of start moving up the curve?
I guess the leaders, if you ask them, to show you, their transportation network and costs and trends and hot points and so forth, they're going to be able to pull that up within a matter of, minutes, and show you, what am I spending by mode in Latin America and in the U.S., for example. The laggards and really those are just the few leaders. I think, the rest of the market is really still catching up in that respect. I think many would be able to show you that kind of information on a regional basis for sure. The laggards would not be able to, right? So that's really sort of the net effect of all of what we're talking about here is the ability to capture and be able to present and manage that data and that information at a first regional, then a corporate level and global level. So I think, if you look at the whole spectrum of companies' ability to do that is really, I think, what defines really the market in terms of who's done well in that challenge.
That's a great litmus test. It goes back to, like we talked about at the beginning of the conversation, being able to answer those basic questions that every transportation executive ought to be able to answer. And if you're not able to answer it quickly and accurately, it kind of shows you that there's room for improvement there. Well, Mike, we're out of time. Again, I want to thank you for making time out of your busy schedule to be with us today. Like I always say at the end of all our episodes, we always just manage to kind of scratched the surface on these topics, but I think we raised a lot of good questions today and good food for thought for companies. So again, thank you for making the time.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you, Adrian.
I want to thank all of you who joined us live today. We didn't get any questions live, but if you are watching this episode on demand, you can search for the episode on talkinglogistics.com. And if you've got a question, you can post it there. And I'm sure Mike will be more than happy to respond via that medium. So again, thank you all for joining us today and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.